Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio. All right. Well, a lot of hitting back and forth certainly going on between the U.S. and China, specifically from President Trump. As you heard from Charlie, we are expecting to hear from the president in some form or fashion later on this afternoon. We'll bring you that as soon as it happens, more details as they become available. In the meantime, let's go to Sean Donnan. He is our senior trade reporter for Bloomberg. He joins us on the phone from Maryland. So, Sean, walk us briefly through what we've seen today. Started with China, moved to the president. We're expecting to hear more, but bring us up to speed.
Yeah, so another remarkable day in the trade wars. Good to do it to Pat Benatar this time. What we started with was something that was really an expected move by the Chinese. They had telegraphed this ahead of time. This was their response to Donald Trump's latest tariffs, which are due to take effect September 1st. They announced a new mix of 5 and 10% tariffs on something like 1,700 different products, hitting things like U.S. crude for the first time. But a lot of it was kind of the familiar cast of characters. Soybeans took another hit in these tariffs. Then we had Jay Powell, and I don't think we can write him out of the trade script today, speaking in Jackson Hole, talking about and really signaling in the speech that he didn't have much control over one of the big things impacting both the U.S. and global economy, and that is trade policy. At one point in the speech, saying that is the responsibility of Congress and the president. And the president seemed to notice that and fired back after the speech, likening or asking the question whether Jay Powell was a bigger enemy of the United States than Chairman Xi of China, and then going on to promise this his latest retaliation against the retaliation from China, and we're waiting for the news on that. Look, the obvious thing that we're all looking for would be another escalation in tariffs. The new tariffs that take effect September 1st on about $110 billion in imports from China are set at 10%. In the past, Trump has raised that to 25%, which seems to be his preferred number. So we could look for something like that. Analysts and some folks close to the White House say that would be an obvious move. But, you know, this is a Friday in August where if everyone's trying to run away and get some peace and quiet, in the trade wars, we're going to get anything but. Things are escalating.
Certainly no peace and quiet today. I want to read a line from one of President Trump's tweets earlier today. He said, "Our great American companies are hereby ordered to immediately start looking for an alternative to China." Sean, is he legally allowed to order companies to return to the U.S.?
Well, he sounds a lot like what a Chinese president might say there, doesn't he? I mean, he kind of, you know, one of the big complaints that you hear from the administration has been over state-owned companies and the kind of state direction of the economy there in China, and this feels a lot like that. The president, of course, doesn't have any legal authority, really, or he has very limited authority to order the private sector and companies to pull out of a big market, but he does have lots of ways to make life difficult for them, and that's certainly what tariffs have done, and he's got other ways that he could raise the pressure on them. We've seen that with the actions against Huawei, with, you know, a ban on doing business with a big company there. There's other ways, there's other kind of national security tools he could use to go after tech companies and some specific technologies. That may be why a lot of tech stocks are taking a hit today. But, you know, overall, he doesn't have the authority to order American companies to do anything, really, but he certainly can make life difficult for them.
Right. And so, given that we don't know exactly what he's going to do, what's the next step in all of this? Sort of setting aside the president's move, what's China's next move? What do you think people are anticipating as we take like a slightly longer worldview here, Sean?
Well, if we take the longer worldview, this is another step down the kind of road of no return to a deal. This is, you know, the big fear that we've seen markets exhibit this summer is that some kind of resolution in these trade wars is getting further and further away, and that as a result, the economic damage from tariffs and what they force in terms of a rerouting of supply chains and just the cost associated with that and the kind of damper on the economy that you see from the uncertainty around these trade wars, and we're going, all of that just kind of extends out even further. You know, yesterday Larry Kudlow was trying very hard to talk up the talks that were going on between kind of working level officials here in the U.S. and in China, and raising the possibility of face-to-face negotiations come September. It feels like, you know, less than 24 hours later, we are so far away from that
right
today, and it's hard to see a road back.
Indeed, indeed. All right, Sean Donnan, always great to get your perspective. Senior trade reporter for Bloomberg, joining us on the phone from Maryland. All right, so Sarah Ponczak, we have been sort of prepping for this interview. I love talking about real estate. No one better to talk about it with than Diane Ramirez. She is chairman and chief executive officer of Halsted. She's here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Great to have you here with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
All right, so we look around this city. Everybody looks to New York City for so many things to sort of set the tone. What's the tone in the real estate market right now, residentially?
I think get in now. It is such a great time. We have been over 2 years correcting in our luxury, and we are correcting across the board. We've got interest rates that are beyond fantastic, and I believe we are at the end of our correction. Mm. So
get in
there.
Bloomberg News had a story earlier this week about prices for apartments in FIDI, saying that prices have really come down. Is this select to FIDI, or is it really across the board when it comes to neighborhoods?
The financial district.
Sorry for my slang.
I love it. FIDI it is. It's across the board, but it depends on inventory. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of new inventory coming in the FIDI area. So, of course, it's going to impact price, supply and demand.
Well, and nearby to that, Diane, you know, we've seen this huge amount of development on the west side, Hudson Yards and everything that's going on there. How has that affected both the inventory and some of the pricing and the demand?
Well, it's increasing the inventory, mm-hmm. and so therefore
these are high end.
But it's very high end. Yeah. But that is where we have the most inventory, okay. so it is impacting prices. But all of that is good. We're clearly in New York in a buyer's market.
What about when it comes to size? I mean, is it better if you're looking for a studio or a one bedroom or a larger apartment that may have 3 to 5 bedrooms, say?
Right. Well, if you're a buyer, the larger the better, because that's where we have the most inventory. Entry level, it's still good inventory compared to what we've had in years gone by. So choice is definitely there. But the larger you are, the higher your price.
Right.
The better your choice, and it will be the most negotiable.
So talk to us about the buyers who are out there, because I feel like one of the big questions and certainly one of the trends over the past few years in New York City has been foreign buyers coming in, you know, people, you know, sort of returning from the suburbs or sort of gravitating toward the big cities. Help us understand some of the nuances there.
Well, the real buyers are our local people. Okay. And when I mean that, I mean it's our, you know, tri-state. And New York City, it's a magnet. It's
right.
where you just want a piece of it. The foreign investors are here, but it's always been a much smaller percentage of buyer than anybody thinks.
Right. So it's different from, say, London or Hong Kong. I mean, London, absolutely. Obviously, was such
yes.
a massive percentage.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Even in the height of investment buyers in the city, the percentages of investors and foreigners was never more than 15 or 20%.
That's really interesting.
Very interesting.
Yes.
I'm curious. You talk about it being a buyer's market. Is there a lot of competition then out there? If you have an offer, if you find a residency that you really, really like, do you need to get an offer in really quickly?
We're out of those days.
Okay.
If you love it and you want it, don't hesitate.
Yeah.
But you usually don't have someone over your shoulder.
All right. We talk a lot on this show, and I know Sarah and I talk about it. She and I are, for those of you who are listening and can't see us, we're different generations. So what's different about the sort of younger set these days, the millennials, even some of the Gen Z that's coming into the market? What are they looking for that's different?
They want to be around. First of all, they want to be around themselves. They want to be near the restaurants, mm-hmm. near the nightlife, where their friends are hanging out. They don't even mind having to take transportation to work as long as they're near their friends.
Ah.
And they also have seen the other generation suffer a little bit with buying and possibly losing a little money. So they're willing to go into areas that are new but have the potential of the prices rising for them. So, and that usually means it's a little bit away from their work
sort
area.
Sort of outer boroughs?
Yes.
Like, I mean, what are we
yeah,
talking
no,
about?
No, like Brooklyn. They'll okay. go into the Bushwick and
yeah.
they'll go into areas, as, you know, it's a bit of a travel, but their friends are there.
Yeah.
And they see upside. They want upside.
I'm a millennial myself, so I must say I'm very interested. Do you see sellers catering to this generation?
Not, when you say sellers, I think developers,
right.
yes. You know, sellers, you know, not so much.
They just want to sell their place.
They just want to sell. They don't care
get
who buys it.
Exactly. All right. Diane Ramirez, what a treat. Thank you so much for joining us. Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Halsted, knowing everything about the market here in New York City. She was nice enough to stop by our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Races. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs.
The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization. We live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Where's the beef?
Young man catch you in the car. She don't see no beef at all.
Where's the beef?
I have to say, Sarah Ponczak, I have referenced back that famous, I believe it was Wendy's commercial from the 1980s, Where's the Beef? It is underneath this massive and really important feature story, I have to say, in Business Week magazine this week. Dina Shanker wrote it. She's a consumer reporter for Bloomberg. The headline says it all. The hottest thing in food is made of peas, soy, and mung beans. She joins us on the phone from New York City. Joel Weber, the editor of Business Week, is here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Dina, I got a chance to catch up with you earlier this week to talk about this for our weekend show, so check that out. There's also a really cool explainer to go along with it. How, I guess the biggest question I have for you is, how did this all happen so fast that Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods have just come so far into the spotlight?
I think that is the question that all of these companies are asking themselves. I think they've been working on these products for a really long time. They got them really good. They put them out in the market. They saw a strong consumer response. But then after Beyond Meat went public and the stock market went crazy, suddenly it just became like a mania.
And when you say mania, we're talking like an IPO that's basically the hottest IPO of the year, with Beyond Impossible, which has had problems actually keeping its product in stores. But there's even greener pastures out there, if you will. And what does that look like, Dina?
So the big battle right now is happening in the big fast food chains. The Impossible Whopper at Burger King has gone national. That is a huge deal. And Beyond Meat has their burgers and their sort of crumbly taco-type beef out in a lot of different regional chains. They have a sausage in Dunkin' Donuts, in breakfast sandwiches, and in Tim Hortons. But really, really, the big prize is going to be McDonald's.
So you mentioned these fast food chains, especially McDonald's. Does it seem like there is one or the other that potentially might win out there? Do we have any hints as to who might be the first to get into McDonald's?
Well, Don Thompson, the former CEO at McDonald's, is on the Beyond board. So a lot of people are really hoping that that means that they have a nice leg up to get in there. And on the first earnings call, they were asked, you know, are you guys going to be able to handle a deal with McDonald's? Do you have the production capacity? And Ethan Brown, the CEO, he laughed and made a joke about how they must have drawn straws to see who was going to answer that, ask that question.
So one of the things that's sort of a knock on the, I guess, the burgers that are, you know, anti-burgers, is that they're actually made of a lot of different things, right? Like plant matter, but even other things. And it starts to resemble almost the very thing that they set out to sort of upend, which are, you know, basically commodity style food that fill grocery stores. And Dina, what are the people at the company saying about that? And how have consumers sort of come to grapple with that as well?
Well, it's interesting. interesting because these burgers are very highly processed, and a lot of people will point to especially the high sodium levels in these burgers, and they still manage to benefit from a bit of a green or of a health halo that people think, oh, well, it's made from plants, it must be healthier, and then they look at the nutrition facts and they start to second-guess themselves. But the companies are handling it. One is, I think, by deflecting a little bit. I heard David Lee, the CFO of Impossible, once say, well, it's not as healthy as broccoli, which, sure, nothing is as healthy as broccoli besides broccoli. And Ethan Brown has said that he gets his burger at Carl's Jr. in a lettuce wrap. But I think that some of the newer products from other companies, like Light Life is a good example, or Hungry Planet, they're really shooting for a healthier nutrition profile. And my guess is that eventually we will see something healthier come from Beyond Meat and Impossible down the road. But for now, I think the consumer confusion around it is playing in their benefit.
That's all right. Talk to us about sausage, because that seems like the holy grail of sorts here, at least as you describe it in your story.
So the Beyond Meat sausage is considered to be, by a lot of people, to be a lot better than their burger. Their burger is good, but their sausage is really great. And from the fast food side, they've got their sausage and breakfast sandwiches at Tim Hortons and at Dunkin' Donuts. They actually make these sausages like according to recipes developed with the chain, so it's not the same sausage. It's a different shape because it's for a sandwich, but it's also a different recipe than you would get at the supermarket. And even at Bear Burger, which is like an upscale burger restaurant that actually serves both the Impossible and Beyond, while the Impossible outsells the Beyond Burger, the founder says that the plant-based sausage from Beyond is probably the closest you'll ever get to tricking a meat eater.
Sarah's nodding that she enjoys the sausage, by the way.
I must agree.
So part of the magic here are the secret ingredients that the companies have really figured out a way to perfect. Can you walk us through the secret ingredients and maybe give us a sample of your favorite one?
So on Impossible, the secret ingredient is something called soy lehemoglobin, or heme for short. And what it is like a fake blood is basically the best way to describe it.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's supposed to mimic animal blood. Heme is something that is found in plants, but in much lower quantities than in meat products. So they developed a genetically engineered yeast that can produce this soy lehemoglobin in large quantities, and that's their magic ingredient, and that's the one that they say is completely responsible for the meatiness of their burger. Now, on the Beyond side, they have a very different approach. They don't want anything genetically engineered in their product, and they instead work with all kinds of plant materials, and they say that the way they do it is they break down the plant materials into their various parts, like lipids, amino acids, minerals, and then they use those parts to rebuild a structure that is very close, as close as possible to meat. So they use right now pea protein. They also have like rice protein and mung beans in there, but they say they can do it with anything,
right,
with any plant. Or
The magic of food. It's a great, great story. Everyone should check it out. We didn't even get into the role of big food in all of this because they're coming for this market for sure. Dina Shenker, great story, consumer reporter for Bloomberg. Check out her story in the current issue of Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Hi ho, hi ho, it's home from work we go.
All right, so we've talked so much about WeWork, maybe ad nauseum, but now let's talk about another up-and-comer in this space, getting a lot of funding, a lot of attention. A great story recently written by Jillian Tan, our senior reporter at Bloomberg. She's here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio, along with the man himself, Amol Sarva. He is chief executive officer of Knotel. That's the company we're talking about. Great to have you both with us. So, Amol, Dr. Sarva, I should say. So tell us about your company, how you got the idea, and where you are now.
Next, well, Knotel is a flexible workspace platform. We make it easy for people to put their people in spaces. I mean, companies can't predict the future. It's not getting any easier. And the lease is the least flexible thing I've ever seen. How'd we do it? Well, I've spent my entire career inside real estate.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I thought maybe I'd try to fix real estate. So the last few years, we've been building this business. We're hundreds of locations all around the world, and we try to help big companies do what I think the co-working kings have done so well in co-working.
Adamol, when we spoke, you had some fighting words. You think WeWork could be behind you guys. They could be the MySpace to your Facebook. Can you talk a little bit about why
it.
And also thoughts on their S1, their prospectus that they filed recently?
I think that co-working is an amazing phenomenon. It's like a 10-year-old thing, and it's been growing a lot. We have just been at it for the last 3.5 years, and there are some really important differences in what we do. We just serve big companies. We just build big spaces. It's floors of buildings or entire buildings, and it's some of the biggest companies in the world that we serve. That seems to be a little bit more attractive a market, I think, even if you look at some of the language that those guys use in their recent filings and press. Enterprise is what the office market's all about. We've been growing so fast. We went from zero to 250 buildings, 4 million square feet in just 3.5 years. And I think at that pace, I mean, it's not insane to predict that we pass them in a couple of years.
How does that work? If you're working with some of those very large companies, some people might assume that they can just go off and get their own space alone. How does it work with them actually coming to you?
Flexibility is something everybody wants. And around the boardroom table, all the big executives got the button they could press. I mean, most recently, the CTO got this button so they could add as many servers as they want in a second. But somehow the real estate guy inside that finance organization is still walking around the streets of New York trying to like build a building or lease a lease. It just doesn't make any sense. Companies prefer to be able to do things on demand. And the proof is just how many have come to us.
If we can go a little bit to the prospectus and what it revealed about WeWork, was there anything in that that jumped out to you? And did you compare or break down the company's performance to your own?
I will admit I was an interested reader of the S1 filing.
As many were.
Unlikely to be an investor after that reading that I gave. It is a phenomenal business. I mean, they have built something really impressive. One of the things, though, that we feel makes our job a lot easier is how efficient we are with capital. And you can just read it right out of their public financials. The guys have raised like $13 billion to get to $3 billion in revenue. They're spending more than $4 for every dollar of revenue they've managed to accomplish. If you compare that to like a Facebook at IPO, that was like a dollar for a dollar. So the ratio is way off. It's a really inefficient capital business. Ours, I think, is 5 to 10 times more efficient than theirs. And that's one of the things that we have really always believed. It's how we built our business. It's why our business is different, and it's part of why we're growing so fast.
And so with any sort of inflection point like this or any disruption, I feel like we're always asking Amol, like, is this a secular change or is this just sort of like something that we're going through, a little bit of a fad? What's secular about this? Has the nature of work changed, the nature of managing growth changed? What is it that fundamentally is different now?
Well, a ton of stuff has changed, and it's going to keep on changing. I know that people asked in 1995 whether print had anything to worry about from the internet, or, you know, whether social networking would be around when they saw how crazy MySpace was, or even like how difficult it was to buy things on eBay. eBay, if you remember, in 2005 was twice as valuable as Amazon.
Yeah.
That story is 50x the opposite now, and I think the fun and games that were the early experience of an auction on the internet, or even of co-working, we're a clue about a bigger trend, and I think the bigger trend is a fundamental change in the way we consume and operate real estate. It is going to be different, way more different. It's only 2% of New York office now. That number is going to go higher. It's going to be 10, 15, 20. It's not going to be 1.
Right. Because we've seen it, I believe, in London really dramatically shift upwards in terms of percentage of the overall space.
The future is here. It's just unevenly distributed. And London is probably 5 times further along in the move towards flexibility. And then there's some markets like Tokyo that are half as developed as we are here. And so Knotel, which started in New York, went from 0 buildings to 100 buildings in about 3 years. Well, we have lit that fire now in a bunch of other markets around the world. We're in a dozen cities, the biggest, densest, most productive cities in the world, and there'll be a bunch more cities in the year to come.
What's next for Knotel? You mentioned cities. Are there any geographic regions that you're hoping to get into soon or different ways about going and attracting investors?
Yeah, and this is another way that we're different from some of the co-working kings. I mean, part of what makes the business efficient is density. So 100 buildings, we're not done in New York. There's going to be 1,000, then there'll be 3,000. More and more and more deeper in the cities where we're at. Yes, there'll be a dozen or so more cities. People always want to guess which one's next. And when we're ready, we will announce. I mean, we just finished launching 7 cities since January in 5 different countries. It has been a huge roar for us. Yeah, and then we have to reinvent our business. I mean, we are deploying fundamental innovations in product and technology that make us go faster all the way through our whole chain. It's all right on point. It's about how we use data and how we deploy and how we build and how we rebuild, creating modular work environments. And that's what our investment is going to let us do.
All right. Great stuff. Thank you so much for stopping by. We should also mention that Bloomberg Beta, the venture capital owner of Bloomberg LP, is among those many who have invested in your company. Amol Sarva is chief executive officer of Knotel, joined with Jillian Tan, our senior reporter for Bloomberg. She wrote this story on the Bloomberg. Check that out when you get a minute.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
And it's time for the Drive to the Close. One of our faves, Quincy Crosby, back with us, Chief Market Strategist for Prudential Financial, joining us on the phone from Newark, New Jersey. A familiar voice to both me and my co-host for the day, Sarah Ponczak. Quincy, great to have you back with us.
Thanks very, very much.
All right, so I think to use a technical term, today has been a doozy across all of the major indices. I mean, some of it seems obvious, but help us understand what's going on. Why are people, again, to use a technical term, so freaked out?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there were a number of episodes in the market today. One was the message from Beijing. It brought the futures market down a bit. And the market, you know, responded, the algorithms hit back. But then the market was, you know, accepted it and moving higher. Chairman Powell had his speech, and the market was higher after that. I mean, not roaring higher, but was climbing higher. And then the tweets hit. The first tweet was, that first strike was pretty much absorbed, this is the enemy tweet, but then the tweet with the I hereby order American companies to get, what that did was it was a verbal pounding on the negotiations. It was a verbal hit to the negotiations, and perhaps sending us off into another uncertain aspect or facet of the negotiations. And I think that's what got the market is the weekend. And I think, you know, investors decided, hey, sell now, ask questions later. See if we get a bit of a walk back, something more measured, perhaps to put a bottom in the market today. But it looks like right now the market is actually losing a bit more. And clearly money went into gold, safe trade. Money went into treasuries, and money went out of all of those areas that are vulnerable to trade negotiations going off the rails, use a technical term.
To go off the rails. I've got to say, whenever I have questions on the desk, I go to you, Quincy, and ask you to make sense of it all. And lately this week, we had seen lots of muted volume. It finally felt like that slow August week, everyone out on vacation. Today, you see a spike in volume. As you mentioned, we have 9 minutes to the close. The S&P is trading at its lows of the day. Yes, we still have to await that announcement from the president, but is it fair to say that today changed the script a little bit?
It did change the script, and I think that's what did it. You know, the market gets used to things. It may sound odd, but the market gets bored. Maybe the president knows this. The market gets bored with the same issues, the same anxieties. Kind of, you need something new, and the president gave the market something new. But it really questions whether or not, and by the way, there are all kinds of theories floating on the internet. I'm not saying I'm in that, you know, dark web finding conspiracy theories, but there are all kinds of theories. Is this really where the White House wants to go, all out verbal war with China? Or was this just the president frustrated by what's going on, with that Chairman Powell did not, you know, do what he wanted him to do, that Beijing came in and kind of ruined the party? Was this the president's instinctive reaction to all of this, and then the algorithms just, you know, having a field day? Or was this something that was actually measured? It's hard to imagine that. And therefore, I think, again, the market just sells off, ask questions later. We'll wait to see if during the weekend there are more comments that are, again, perhaps more measured going into next week.
Something I find a bit surprising is the dollar. If you look at the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index today, it's having its worst day in over a month, yes, since July 18th. What does this tell you? For once, the dollar is slipping off of its footing.
Well, yeah, that is interesting because we were watching the dollar during the Powell's speech, and the dollar moved a little bit up, a little bit down. But what this suggests is that the market thinks that the White House could engineer some sort of intervention into the currency. That's what this represents. So in a bizarre way, the president has actually gotten a weaker dollar.
And so you mentioned, Quincy, that we'll obviously look for headlines across the weekend. Mm-hmm. We may get some comments later on from President Trump. But what ultimately makes the market feel better? Who do they need to hear from, and what do they need to hear?
The market, you know, the market understands, analysts understand that we're not going to have a conclusion to negotiations for some time. But the market just doesn't want things to decelerate.
Right.
They don't want things to get worse. And that is what, not Beijing's announcement this morning, but the president's comments give you this feeling that somehow the negotiations are, again, moving into another phase.
Yeah.
So what do the markets need to know? They need to know that maybe things are okay, that the negotiations are continuing, that that there's a more measured pace, that nothing is falling apart. Markets don't like when things feel as if they're falling apart. And, you know, just look at the market. I rest my case. We're not going into the close with pairing the losses unless something hits the tape. So that's what the market wants. And also, we have a full plate of data releases next week, and it would be helpful to have an unequivocally, clutch of positive surprises in the data, because
right,
we had some data releases this week that were concerning, particularly on the service sector. So that would be positive for the market, because, again, the other worry, if there's another worry, is, does the Fed have enough ammunition,
right,
in conventional monetary policy to handle a deceleration in the U.S. economy? Should that happen?
All right, we're going to leave it there. Great to get your perspective on this day where, as you say, the market's losses are actually accelerating into the close. Quincy Crosby, Chief Market Strategist for Prudential Financial. She joined us on the phone from Newark, New Jersey. Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.